Good afternoon. I hope nobody had a problem finding a seat today. There's a particular saying that a writer I favor used once. He said, if we do the right things for the wrong reasons, the work becomes corrupted, impure, and ultimately self-destructive. To an enormous degree, that's how the church corrupted itself in the 1990s, even though all the reasons for it had actually begun long before that. The 90s simply saw all the poisons hatching out. And that's why someday soon we're very likely to wake up in this nation and find ourselves in a police state. I'm reminded of Benjamin Franklin's pronouncement back during the founding days of the Republic. He said, those who would give up their liberties for temporary safety deserve neither safety nor liberty. So what do we see? Because of attacks and threats on this country, we see people more than ready to give up those liberties with very little thought for the consequences. Because for the most part, people don't know what they believe. They don't understand the price that has to be paid for their beliefs or their lack of belief. So instead of hearing people screaming over the intrusion into their civil liberties, we see the vast majority going completely asleep. As Thomas Jefferson pointed out, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free, it expects what never was and never will be. And this country has been dumbed down in much the same way the church was dumbed down, until by the 90s the church had no real defenses against the destruction that took place. Just like the world around us, too many people in the church were holding to beliefs and traditions without really knowing why they believed what they believed. Is such a situation all that different from what the third chapter of the book of Revelation says in God's judgment on the church at Laodicea? They had the truth, they knew God, they knew the doctrines, they held the beliefs, they thought they were rich and increased with goods. But did they know why? Or had they too, like our civilization today, become so complacent, so at ease in all their certainties, that they couldn't see the destruction coming upon them? Because when complacency is rampant, a culture dies. What about us? Do we know why we believe what we believe? Does it matter? Where is our foundation? If we are doing the right things for the wrong reasons, we won't endure. Because when the foundation is faulty, the building cannot survive. If the 90s taught me anything, it was the truth of the statement that to find the truth, you have to be willing to ask hard questions. In a certain way, I began questioning every aspect of my beliefs, including how I viewed the scriptures, how I had come to know God himself, and for a while, I had a hard time finding the answers. I had assumed I knew particular scriptures, but when I reviewed those scriptures, I finally found the honesty to look at them just for what they said and realize that in many cases, they didn't seem to make sense. I had assumed their meaning. I had taken the traditional church viewpoint up to that time and rarely gone beyond it. And I suddenly had to admit that I hadn't really seen them for whatever it was they were really saying. And that's when I started asking hard questions of God. And the more I asked, and the more I looked, the more I was struck by what I had already known, that our God, our Father, invites us to prove everything. We've always heard that, even back to Herbert Armstrong's comments of "Don't believe me, believe the Bible." But how deeply have we taken that invitation? Or have we been taking God's truth for granted in all the wrong ways? And in that context, as it says in Hebrews 2, verses 1 to 3, have we been neglecting this great salvation? The testimony of God to us throughout the scriptures is rife with the encouragement, or the challenge to prove our beliefs and to prove him. He knows it can't work any other way. He knows that doubt will kill us. So he challenges us to remove the doubts, not with wishful thinking or good feelings or comfortable traditions, but by putting him to the test and expecting positive results until we know that we know him, until we know how much he loves us and wants to pour out mercy on us, until we take his involvement with us and the truth of his word for granted, but in the right way, the way that will make a difference in our lives and will give us the certainty, the confidence, the peace that whatever comes, he really is in it with us and always will be there to help. And since we have to start somewhere, God gives us a testimony that is real, practical, certain. I'm going to recite several familiar scriptures, all of which are meant to give us that needful foundation. In Malachi 3, verse 10, in the context of tithing, God says simply, prove me. He doesn't say just accept. He doesn't tell us to just believe what we've been taught. He doesn't say that understanding isn't necessary, only obedience. He tells us instead to prove him, to put him to the test. And obviously that requires positive action on our part, not sitting back in fear, but respectfully confronting him, as did many people of God throughout history, and then expectantly waiting for the answers to come, just as it came for them. In Acts 17, verse 11, the Bereans searched the scriptures daily to see if these things were so. This wasn't doubtful searching or cynicism or destructive questioning like we often see in the media today, and unfortunately we've even seen at times in the church. This was expectant searching. They wanted to know the truth and were willing to ask, seek, and knock, not just sit back and hope for the best. In 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 21, prove all things and hold fast what is good. Once you know something is true, once you know it works, you're far more apt to hang on to it rather than carelessly letting it go, giving it up without a thought, especially when things get tough. And another side to this is shown in Galatians 6, verses 3 to 4, that says, prove your own selves, don't be deceived. And obviously that's part of it. If, as in the church in Laodicea, we think we're in good shape and haven't bothered to ask some questions of ourselves, we won't even see what we're missing. We don't know what we don't know. And self-deception is a human specialty. However, be careful not to take that too far. Just like the few scriptures mentioning self-examination, the object is never a negative one. It's more like giving your car over to a mechanic for preventative maintenance. It's a positive action meant to tackle problems before they overwhelm you. After all, if we think we don't have a particular problem, we'll never be motivated to confront that problem and do something about it. And this facet is not meant to open a door to focus thoroughly inward at all your perceived or imagined. Instead, God has to remain the focus always, with the certainty that he's always there to help us along the way. After all, sometimes doing something about our problems simply means learning how to give them over to God, which is the ultimate answer to our problems in any case. And it's all part of testing God's motivations until we find how trustworthy he really is and how dedicated he is to our eternal futures. Learning that engenders a natural faith. And if you're afraid to push God, consider the example of Gideon in Judges 6, verses 36 to 40. Gideon not only sought to test God, but he did it twice over. And God seemed more than willing to follow through. So that by chapter 7, when God asked something rather extreme of Gideon, Gideon was well able to believe and obey. He had already seen the proof. He knew God now in a way he'd never known him before. And in that knowing came new confidence. We live thousands of years later, but the solutions remain the same. We want a deep, confident relationship with our Creator. He wants the same. And the way to firm up that foundation has always remained simple, basic, obvious. Two more scriptures. In Revelation 2, in his words to the Ephesian church, God said simply, return to your first love. And as the original means, put me first. You did at the start, don't stop now. Put me first in your life, and all else will fall into place. Then our foundation will be sure. Because as in Matthew 7, verses 24 to 25, our foundation will be on the rock. And then we'll survive any storm.